Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The first monkeypox case has been confirmed in the Czech Republic. A second tent town for Ukrainian refugees is planned for Prague. And the Czech president has rejected 11 requests from Czechs to fight for Ukraine. The first case of monkeypox has been confirmed in the Czech Republic, says Nam Spravy, reported on Tuesday. The chairman of the infectious medicine group at the J.E. Perkinia Czech Medical Society, Pavel Dlouhý, told the news site that the patient in question was being treated at Prague's Central Military Hospital. Monkeypox cases have recently been discovered across Europe, the US and other countries. The rare viral infection doesn't tend to spread easily between people. A second tent town for refugees from Ukraine will be created in Prague, an Interior Ministry spokesperson said on Tuesday. The centre will be erected in the city's Malashitsa district within a week and should have a capacity of 150. A tent town for refugees has been operating in the Troja district of Prague for some weeks. The centre in Malashitsa was agreed by Prague's mayor Zdeněk Hřib and the Minister of the Interior Vít Rakušan during talks on Tuesday. Earlier, the mayor of Prague, Zdeněk Hřib, had proposed that benefits and grants for Ukrainian refugees be limited in parts of the country that have reached capacity as regards taking people in. The capital has been suffering from a lack of capacity for some time, and its leaders have called for a greater sharing of the refugee burden with other regions of the Czech Republic. President Miloš Zeman on Tuesday turned down requests from 11 Czech citizens to join the armed forces of Ukraine, a spokesperson for the head of state said. Mr. Zeman rejected the applications on the recommendation of the Czech Ministry of Defense. The president recently gave his approval to 103 Czechs seeking to fight for Ukraine against Russia. Joining the army of another state without such an exemption is a crime under Czech law. President Zeman's office could face a fine of up to 200,000 crowns over the controversial shedding of classified documents, Czech radio reported on Tuesday. The office of the president has been accused of shredding an intelligence report relating to a Russian operation on Czech territory in 2013 that left two people dead. Czech radio said the National Archive would now decide about any potential wrongdoing, adding that Mr. Zeman's officials had also shredded hundreds of other classified documents late last year. The organization that administers the Czech internet will on Wednesday cease to block 8 websites spreading disinformation. CZ.nic made the site's domains inaccessible on February 25th, just after Russia launched its war on Ukraine, following consultation with the state authorities. The 8 were accused of relativizing, justifying or approving of Russia's aggression toward Ukraine. A representative of CZ.nic said the websites no longer posed a threat, in part due to the fall in their visitor numbers. Apartment prices in the Czech Republic grew by 20.6% year-on-year in the first quarter of 2020, according to data from the bank Hypoteční banka, cited by the Czech news agency on Tuesday. House prices increased by 19.6% in that period, while sites went up by 23.7%. And finally, the weather forecast. It should be mainly overcast in the Czech Republic on Wednesday, with an average high temperature of 18 degrees Celsius. More cloudy weather is expected on the following days. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Here's what's coming up in today's programme. The Russian embassy may soon be losing some of its properties in Prague. The massive glass-stained windows of Prague's Výstaviště Industrial Palace are undergoing a major renovation. And later we'll speak to Milan Reindl, the only Czech designer for Lego. All that is coming up, so please stay with us. Thanks to contracts signed under the communist regime, the Russian embassy received a vast amount of real estate in Prague, Karlovy Vary and other Czech cities free of charge to be used for diplomatic purposes. With just 6 Russian diplomats left in the country, though, the Czech Foreign Ministry says that it is time to revise property relations and make the embassy accountable for how the property is used, as Daniela Lazarová reports.
The Russian school building in Bubenec, a section of Stromovka Park, 200 flats intended for diplomats, and a villa in the luxury quarter of Yevany on the Prague suburbs. Those are just some of the several dozen lucrative properties that are at the disposal of the Russian embassy. Contracts dating back to communist governments have either transferred ownership of the properties to the embassy or given it the right to use them indefinitely for free. With Czech-Russian relations at freezing point and just a handful of Russian diplomats left in the country, Foreign Minister Jan Lipovsky concluded that it is high time to revise property relations, setting up a working group to look into how the property afforded to the Russian embassy is being used in the present day. Deputy Foreign Minister Martin Dvořák explains what legal claims the Czech Republic can make if the property is in the embassy's ownership.
Whether it is being used for diplomatic purposes or not makes a big difference. Properties used for diplomatic purposes have diplomatic immunity and other privileges. The Czech authorities have no right to entry to such buildings, and they enjoy tax and other privileges. And from what we know today, only about 5 of the properties serve for diplomatic purposes under the terms of the Vienna Convention. The remaining 36 or 37 do not.
One of the most blatant examples of this are the 200 flats intended for Russian diplomats and VIP embassy guests. How they're being used has been a matter of debate for some time, and the Foreign Ministry's attempt to open up this sensitive issue with the Russian authorities in 2017 led nowhere. Deputy Foreign Minister Martin Dvořák says it is time to address the issue again.
We have serious indications that these properties are the subject of illegal economic activities. We have received information that the flats are being rented out to private individuals who are moreover paying in cash. This would be in violation of the Vienna Convention. These are things that should not be happening, but very likely are. So we want to straighten things out.
Given that the 2017 attempt to open up the matter with Russia failed, what are the chances that, given the current freeze in relations, they may succeed? Deputy Foreign Minister Martin Dvořák says the government must exert pressure to find a solution.
First, we would like to try reaching an agreement with the Russian side based on the fact that circumstances have changed. If that fails, we would consider legal action. But we would have to make sure that we have a strong case in court. Moving on now, 13 years after being destroyed by fire, the Industrial Palace at Prague's exhibition grounds is now undergoing an extensive reconstruction. As part of the works, which started about 2 months ago, restorers have now begun to repair the massive stained glass windows of the palace. And Ruth Frankova has this story about it.
The Art Nouveau glass and steel building of the Industrial Palace, designed by the Czech architect Bedřich Münzenberger, first opened to visitors on March 1891 on the occasion of the General State Exhibition held at the newly built exhibition grounds in Holešovice. During the communist era, party congresses were held in the building, and for a while the original St. Wenceslas crown on top of the palace's tower was even replaced with a Soviet red star. In October 2008, a fire broke out in the palace, started by an electric stove left on in an exhibitor's stand, burning down the entire left wing. The heat also destroyed many of the stunning glass-stained windows that decorate the palace. This month, restorers started to work on their renovation. Zdeněk Kudláček from Collective Ateliers is in charge of the renovation. His first job is to remove all of the panes from the steel supporting frame without breaking the fragile glass. Perhaps somewhat surprisingly, all he needs is a big hammer.
I spent 2 weeks looking for the right technique. In the end, I discovered that all I need is a hammer, a big blow, and a precise hit. I started on the side destroyed by the fire, where I picked the panes that had already been damaged. I have to admit that when I first walked in here and looked around the building, I had no idea where to start and I broke out in sweat. Then I gradually tried what works, or as I say, thought with my hands.
The renovation of the stained glass windows of the Industrial Palace is said to be the largest renovation of historical stained glass in 100 years. The windows have a total area of over 2,200 square meters, and restorers have to gradually dismantle all of the more than 5,000 parts. Workers are also gradually taking down the tower of the Industrial Palace. In the summer, they should bring down its frame and repair it. They are also working on new facilities on the location of the left wing, explains deputy mayor Pavel Vyhnánek.
Construction companies have removed more than 1,000 truckloads of soil, and another 1,000 still need to be removed. We have started with the restoration of the historical elements, where a whole series of works awaits us.
The renovation of Prague's Industrial Palace, which also includes building a replica of the destroyed left wing, is estimated to cost some 2.5 billion crowns and should be completed by 2025.
Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day, brought to you again by Ruth Frankova.
Milan Reindl, a former English teacher from a small town of Sušice, is the only Czech working as a model designer at the Danish toy giant Lego. He only fell for the Lego bricks in his mid-20s, and just a few years later, he landed a dream job in the Lego Technic department. This autumn, Milan Reindl will also star in the first Czech edition of the Lego Masters show. I spoke to him on the phone to Denmark's Billund, and I first asked him how he got the dream job in Lego.
In 2010, Lego Group was looking for new designers, and I was bold enough just to send my CV with a few images of my best-looking models and hope for the best. And afterwards, nobody called me back for like half a year, and then I was invited for the first job interview, which I passed quite successfully. But afterwards, within a few days, I was informed that they actually occupied the new designer position with somebody internally, so I will have to wait. And I just wanted to show them that they made a big mistake, and luckily for me, there was another vacant position in a year, and then afterwards we just shook hands, and since 2012 I'm working as a Lego designer in the Lego Technic department over here in Billund.
So were you always into Lego since your early childhood?
I wouldn't call it even early childhood, because the first time I touched Lego bricks was when I was 10, and it wasn't even my Lego. It was at my friend's place, and I really fell in love with the infinite possibilities of what you could build with limited amount of bricks and just small pile of pieces, how much you could combine them into all sorts of different models. And then a year later, I got my first own Lego set, and then I got a few more, but we didn't have much when I was a kid. And when I was like 14, I just dropped Lego for good, and I thought I will never come back. But something happened when I was 25. I got a Lego Technic set for Christmas, and that just ignited my new passion, or newfound passion for Lego, especially for Lego Technic, and it became sort of an addiction, maybe even an obsession. And since I was 25, I never stopped building.
You spoke about getting the job in Lego. How difficult was it? What did the job interview look like?
The job interview for me was totally different to what the new applicants have to go through these days. Back then, I was just sent an email with some requirements, what I should prepare, which was like some hand-drawn sketches, some ideas for new Lego elements, and then I was sent three boxes that were unfortunately stuck for like 2.5 weeks in Germany. And when I got them, I got like 6 days instead of 3 weeks to build up my home assignment. But I managed to do it overnight. And then I brought as well some of my build models together with me to the interview that happened in Prague with the former leader of the Lego Technic department back then.
What does your regular work day look like?
Some people just think that we play all the time at work, Of course, that would be great, and sometimes it is like this, but of course we need to as well do some parts that we do not like that much about our jobs, like attend meetings and do some paperwork, reply to email and stuff like that. But if you have really a good day, you could possibly spend, let's say, two-thirds to three-quarters of it just, you know, listening to your favorite music and building and exploring the Lego bricks.
And is the new design entirely up to you? Do you come with the design ideas or do you work according to some assignment?
It could be pretty much both, but sometimes the designers come up with great ideas that are afterwards engraved into the new assortment of the Lego Technic department. Sometimes it's our bosses that come with something that is, you know, either trending in the toy industry or in general, or some licensed models that would be interesting if, for example, like a famous car brand is launching a new supercar, etc. So yes, it could be both ways.
As you said, you have worked in Lego since 2012 and you have since created around 30 designs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's right now like 27, but I'm getting close to 30.
So which of them are you most proud of?
The models I'm most proud of, one of my favorite models that I designed is the Fireplane 42040 that I designed in 2015, and it just ticks all the boxes that the great LEGO Technic model should have. It looks good, it's sturdy, it's playable, it has plenty of functions, it works the way the toys should work. Another one would be possibly the Land Rover Defender that I designed 2.5 years ago.
Which of them was the most challenging to make?
Definitely the more challenging to make was the Land Rover Defender, because there's very complex gearbox and the car is basically wrapped around the whole gear case section. But afterwards you have as well all the other functions that you need to pack inside kind of small package of a car. So it was kind of difficult to find space for all these things like suspension, steering, winch, opening doors, opening tailgate, etc. But I would say the one that took the most toll from me in terms of like stress, workload and everything was the Mercedes-Benz Zetros, which is like a remote-controlled off-road truck. And I was close to locking that model when the COVID-19 lockdown just hit hard the whole world. And there was pretty much no one nowhere. And like to get decisions to be made, to have answers from the licensing partner, to get any help from my colleagues was extremely difficult because everybody was working back then from home and we were totally isolated.
As far as I know, you don't only design machines or vehicles. You also like to design animals.
I do not design them as official products because LEGO Technic core is mostly real-life vehicles and authentic machines. But I tend to like take my or my colleague's sets and afterwards in my free time rebuild them into something that resembles either animals or like some mythical or fantasy creatures like dragons, etc. Yes.
Do you mostly work on your own or do you actually cooperate with other designers in the team?
Most of it is a team effort and like you are responsible for your own model, but it shouldn't stop you from asking for feedback from your own colleagues. And when problems arise, you always go and seek help amongst your colleagues because there's so much knowledge, so much expertise and experience. Like some of my colleagues started in the LEGO Technic department in 1987 and their first sets that they designed were the ones that I was admiring in the catalogs the first time I discovered the LEGO bricks. You know, they helped even to shape my childhood, which is kind of amazing to work with people like this.
You are the only Czech in the team. How many nationalities are there and how big is the team actually?
The LEGO Technic team as such has 14 designers, plus we have our design managers as well. And we are a mixture of mostly Danish, then we have some German, American, Norwegian, French, and I'm the only Czech person. But like within the overall design organization at the LEGO Group, we are right now over 400 different designers from over 40 countries. So it's quite a diverse design team.
What would you say are the qualities a successful LEGO designer needs to have?
First of all, I would say you need a lot of passion for what you're doing because, you know, without the interest and the fun you're having while you're doing these, you shouldn't be doing this stuff. You should be looking somewhere else if it doesn't bring you any happiness or any joy. And you should be very, very patient especially like if you're designing Lego Technic models, sometimes you need to rebuild some of the sections, let's say 50 times before you nail them and get them right. Especially if you're working on something that is licensed, sometimes the licensing partners just want the best of both and you try to make them happy. So you're just rebuilding until you get it right. And then, of course, general interest in toys, understanding as well the target audience, which is children of all ages. So you should know what children like to play with. And if you have a degree from industrial design or even toy design, that definitely helps. But there are many of my colleagues that do not have any design background and they are very successful and good designers.
You have lived in Denmark's Billund for nearly a decade now. What do you like about life in Denmark? And in what way is it different from life here in the Czech Republic?
I think Danes tend to spend more time and use the free time more with their families. They just tend to stick together more as a family. They have more like family gatherings and celebrations and, you know, birthday parties and Christmas parties and stuff like this. Danes are in quite many ways very similar to the Czech people because they like their beer, they like to smoke. On the other hand, compared to many Czech people, they do a lot more exercise. And what I like as well about Denmark is that you just have the seaside basically like 30 kilometers away from Billund. So if you want to go and swim in the sea, it's totally possible. It's a bit colder, but it's not too bad. But to be honest, I do very deeply miss like the forests and hills in Czech Republic and the rivers and the castle ruins and stuff like this, because there's nothing like this in Denmark. The land is very much flat, so not great country for skiing, definitely.
We should also mention that you will feature in the first edition of Lego Masters series here in the Czech Republic in the role of the main judge, the so-called Brick Master. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I was approached by the production company, I believe it was like somewhere in mid-autumn last year, if I could find time to be the Brickmaster for the show. And I saw this as a great opportunity because I know the program from so many other language mutations. And this program looks like so much fun when you watch it. I just decided to take the opportunity and just jump on it. And we afterwards spent 3 weeks filming in Poland right after Christmas during the winter time with our contestants on the Polish set. And I hope this is going to be as much fun as it was the video shooting.
And you were listening there to Milan Reindl, a former English teacher from the small town of Sušice, who is now the only Czech working as a model designer at the Danish toy giant Lego. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on our Facebook and Twitter accounts. We'll be glad to hear from you. Also, a heads up, tomorrow is our next episode of our archaeology series. This time we'll be focusing on the Přemysl dynasty and what archaeology can tell us about them. And later in the week, we'll also have a special feature looking back at the 80th anniversary of the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich. But that is all for now from me, Tom Akro. I thank you very much for joining us and I wish you a lovely day.